The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. In Raising the Ruins, this is a book that we produced back in, 2006? So it's been around for a number of years now. But I wrote in that book about what happened to the Worldwide Church of God in the years following Herbert Armstrong's death back in January of 1986. And for many people that were associated with the Worldwide Church of God, even loosely associated with the Worldwide Church of God, the book was a real eye-opener. It was based on a lot of the discovery, a lot of the internal documents in the Worldwide Church of God, telling the story, holding up the facts under the clear light of day so that everyone could see what actually happened. And before that, of course, a lot of people were pretty fuzzy on what was actually happening inside that church. And the fact that this new administration, from the beginning, concealed its intentions from church members, co-workers. They concealed what it was that they were doing, their true intentions, their motivations. Joseph Tkach, his son, Joseph Tkach Jr., they were leading the way, taking this church through a transformation, really imposing their will on a church of tens of thousands of members, hundreds of thousands of co-workers. And early on, when they were making all of these changes to doctrines, policies, when they were dismantling everything about the church, everything that Herbert Armstrong had built, they often said, well, what changes? We're not changing anything. What are you talking about? You critics, you nitpickers that are just saying, well, this little thing got changed. Now look at where it's going to lead. Look, we're not changing anything. And they continued systematically destroying all of the teachings, all of the doctrines, forcing it upon unwitting and unwilling members, changing the church's commission, demoting the old guard, all the while saying that, hey, we're living and doing the same things we've always done. In Transformed by Truth, this was the book written after all of the transformation had happened. 1997 it came out. It came out in the same year as it happens that we took the church, the Worldwide Church of God, to court. They actually sued us. We printed Mystery of the Ages, but we eventually filed a counterclaim and went after Mystery of the Ages and 18 other works of Herbert Armstrong. But in 1997, years after the fact, this is how Joe Tkach Jr. remembered those early years when they were changing the teachings of the church. He said in his book, some cult watchers, ministries, churches, and pastors can be more of a hindrance when it comes to helping individuals or aberrant groups break away from their cultic theology and practice. He says, one of our greatest challenges has been trying to explain these doctrinal reforms to outsiders while maintaining our credibility internally. And some groups have greatly hindered our efforts by their reporting. It's a revealing statement from 1997, because he's talking about what they were doing in 1988, 1989, 1990, when they were communicating with all of these groups, these outside groups, these outside ministries and cult-watching ministries, and saying, look, be nice to us. We're making all these changes. We're conforming to the teachings of traditional Christianity. We're no longer outside the mainstream. That's what they would say to those on the outside. To those of us on the inside, they said, hey, nothing's changing. Everything's like it's always been. Everything's the same. And you can see why this presented problems for them, because they were speaking out of both sides of their mouths. And we were there, just a tiny little church at the time, the Philadelphia Church of God. They made fun of us, calling us a peanut shell. But we were there telling the truth, reporting on what was actually happening, to the best of our knowledge, just looking at their own documents, just examining their own statements, and then making it known to anyone who wanted to know the truth. All through this story, all through this history, their story just kept changing and evolving over time. Really, really, the only time you got any bit of honesty is after it had all happened. And then they look back on it. They look back on it today, as I just read to you in that quote. They say, we were a cult. We were a cult. Herbert Armstrong was a heretic. And I'm so glad we came out of that. That's what they say now. Of course, back when it was happening, back when they were transforming it, they tried to disguise what they were actually doing. They lied about it over and over and over again. Now, why do I bring this up? Well, because in America Under Attack, my father said that the Satan, the devil, I mean, he uses the same strategy today when bringing down our nations. This is how he attacks Israel, whether it's spiritual Israel or the physical descendants of ancient Israel. My father said this is a big goal of the devil and his demons. They are out to bring Israel down, whether spiritual or physical. And he says here, what happened in that church shows you something of a blueprint for what Satan began to do in these nations. He's talking about the United States primarily. And then he says, this is why it's so important to grasp the church history, because it's a blueprint. What happened back in the late 1980s and the early 1990s, it's a blueprint for what's happening to the United States of America today. Satan is bringing our nations down. I touched on this yesterday. Satan is destroying us from within. As my father said in the booklet, through all the destruction, he's using individuals to destroy law and government. So everything comes unglued and falls apart. That's what it's all about. That's what we're seeing. Yesterday, as I say, we talked about this ongoing war against the Trump administration. I mean, he's got enemies coming from every angle. Enemies from the Democratic Party, enemies from the FBI and the DOJ. Obviously, enemies in the media. From every direction. I played a few clips yesterday from former FBI Director James Comey, his interview with ABC. And more revelations came out about that interview yesterday, even after our program. Because he sat down with George Stephanopoulos and talked for more than 5 hours. And ABC had to piece together what it thought were the highlights in a one-hour block. But 5 hours, and some of the exchanges that didn't make it on the particular program that aired were released yesterday on the internet. And in this first section that I'll play for you, again, these are some pretty revealing comments by James Comey, who, as I said yesterday, came out with this new book. And it's just basically full of gossip and rumors and shots at President Trump and his appearance and how he looks and how he acts, his mannerisms, things of that nature. But in this exchange with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday, He's talking here about a meeting that he had with President Trump following the Super Bowl last year. So this is, I guess, probably around February 2017, the meeting that he would have had with Trump. And it's after he made some comments on an interview that played at the halftime of the Super Bowl, where the president, when the interviewer brought up the fact that Vladimir Putin was cruel and involved in all kinds of wars and so on, and the president said, well, you know, the United States has its sins when it comes to wars and such. And the president got a lot of flack for that. And evidently, James Comey confronted him on this following the Super Bowl last year. Here's clip number one.
Gave me an opening by saying, you think it was a great answer. You think it was a good answer. And then he was starting to move on. And I jumped in and I said, Mr. President, the first part of the answer was fine. Not the second part. We're not the kind of killers that Putin is. And when I said that, the weather changed in the room, and like a shadow crossed his face, and his eyes got this strange kind of hard look. And I thought in that moment, I've just done something unusual, maybe. And then it passed, and the meeting was over. And thanks for coming in, and Priebus walked me out.
You had another mob flashback.
Yeah, I did. Although in that moment I was thinking, I just succeeded, although I hadn't intended to, in ending any personal relationship between me and the president by interrupting him and also criticizing him to his face. And I went back and told my staff that it happened, and I thought, and told them, that's not a bad thing because it will help us keep a distance that we need to keep from him.
So they needed to keep a distance, keep it professional. But this, according to Jim Comey, is when President Trump turned on him. This is when the president of the United States supposedly turned on Comey. In the estimation of Comey, he had a, as the moderator said there, not the moderator, the interviewer, the former aide of Bill and Hillary Clinton, you had another mob flashback. Because, see, Comey views Trump as a mafia boss. He's heading up the mob. Here's a mob flashback. And this criticism, this interruption, this is when everything changed. This is when it all went bad, the relationship. This is when Trump turned. Because Comey had the audacity to criticize him. The real story here, though, the real story is not when President Trump supposedly turned. The real story is when James Comey and many other agents and bureaucrats and investigators at the DOJ, at the FBI, in the deep state, in the swamp, whatever you want to call it, when they turned against President Trump, because it was long before last February, as so many of these revelations are bringing out and making obvious, they have had it in for Donald Trump from the beginning. From the moment he came down that escalator in 2015 and declared his candidacy. And certainly when he became the front runner, from that point forward, they've been trying to take him down. And it's in the same interview, by the way, when Comey makes it pretty obvious that he turned against Trump early on in the process. Listen in this next clip to his exchange with President Obama and the impact that Barack Obama had on James Comey during that transition period, before the inauguration, before he met with President-elect Trump. This was, I think, from his final meeting with Obama. And here's how that went down, clip two.
You met with President Obama after the election.
Yeah, he held me back after one of the very last meetings I had with him after the election, and he said, but I want to just tell you something generally. I appointed you to be FBI director because of your integrity and your ability. And then he looked me in the eye and he said, nothing has happened, nothing, in the last year that has changed my view of that. And look, he wasn't telling me, I agree with what you did. He wasn't telling me you made the right decision. He was telling me, I know where it came from. I know you're not a partisan hack. I know you're trying to do the right thing. And it meant a lot to me. mean, I had not been a political supporter of President Obama's. I came to deeply respect him and his higher loyalty to the values I care a lot about. And I almost got emotional in that moment because, again, I've been walking around like Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense and have the President of the United States say, I still respect you for the reasons I did originally, meant a lot to me.
This is a very revealing quote. It's a very revealing exchange about his deep respect for Barack Obama's higher loyalty. Jim Comey is not a partisan hack. And how do we know this? Because Barack Obama says so. Barack Obama says he's not a partisan. And in fact, you go back and look at the track record from 2016. There's no denying that he was in a difficult position. Mr. Comey, I mean. Because Hillary's going forward as the Democratic nominee, and he's got to try to find a way to walk that tightrope of making sure that she's not prosecuted, that she's not convicted, and yet still trying to give the appearance that he's above politics. He's not taking sides one way or the other. He's trying to make it seem like there's a fair and honest investigation going on here. But in the final analysis, look, her intent wasn't to hurt the United States of America with that private server and all the emails. Never mind gross negligence. Look, she didn't know everything that she was doing. And she's from an older generation. You've got to cut her some slack. And then he has that exchange with Obama there at the end. And President Obama says, look, you did your job. I know you're not a partisan hack. There's work yet to be done. That's the message. That was the signal. The fight is not over. I respect you. And the feeling was mutual. He deeply respected Obama. He deeply respected Obama's higher loyalty. He respected Obama's values. But he's not political, you understand, because he didn't support him politically. So he says, here's clip 3.
Yeah, I said to him, Mr. President, first of all, I said, thank you, Mr. President. It has been a nightmare. I've just tried to do the right thing. And he said, I know. And then I said, I think my wife would kill me if I didn't take this chance to thank you and to tell you how much I'm going to miss you.
His wife would kill him because she's a, well, I guess, partisan hack, maybe? She's an avid Hillary supporter who was devastated. She was devastated when Hillary lost the election. And that came out in these interviews as well. Let's move ahead to clip 12.
Take us inside your house at that point. You've written about this, your wife, Patrice, Hillary Clinton supporter.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't take a poll among all the kids, but I'm pretty sure that at least my four daughters, probably all five of my kids, wanted Hillary Clinton to be the first woman president.
I wanted a woman president really badly, and I supported Hillary Clinton. A lot of my friends worked for her, and I was devastated when she lost.
She was devastated. The family was devastated. Jim Comey was above all of that. He's above the fray. McCabe says the same thing. He was the number two man at the FBI. His wife, fanatical Hillary supporter. And he's since been pointed at with this investigation from Friday. I just touched on it yesterday. He lied. He lied to investigators. And he's since been fired. So here are these people high up at the FBI, the very top, swooning. In the presence of Barack Obama. I will miss you. My wife will kill me. You have displayed higher loyalty. I have deep respect for you and all of your values. And then the former top aide to Bill Clinton, take us inside your house. What was happening there? Well, we were devastated. This is his last meeting with Barack Obama. I referred to this Larry Elder column from a few weeks back. And it just, the reason I brought it up then was because it makes a point that my father made in 2013 in America Under Attack. Elder says, Joan Walsh of the liberal website Salon.com described how fellow journalists were swooning during the presidential candidacy over the first-time senator from Illinois. I was struck. This is Barack Obama's influence. This is how he impacted the nonpartisan media. I was struck when I got to Iowa and New Hampshire in January by how our media colleagues were just swooning over Barack Obama. This is not too strong a word. They were swooning. They were swooning. Now, in chapter 2 of America Under Attack, that's where my father made that point. It was in Michael Hastings' interview with a reporter at MSNBC. He said it was just the presence of Obama that made people in the press swoon. They started behaving in ways that are juvenile, amateurish, and they swoon. Well, as it turns out, a lot of that happens within the deep state as well. Even at the top tier of the FBI. The swooning. There's plenty of it to go around. My father said the mainstream media regularly just go along with what the president says, even at times when it can be easily proven false. What is causing such actions? Even Hastings himself admitted to getting caught up in the behavior around the president. He just kind of laughed it off. Well, it's to be expected. After all, he's Barack Obama. He didn't have one scandal for 8 years. Not one scandal. There's no higher loyalty. We have nothing but deep respect reserved for him. So says the, well, at the time, the FBI director. This is what Comey went on to say in that exchange, clip 4.
And also, I told him that I dread the next 4 years, but in many ways, I feel great pressure to stay, to try and protect the institution I lead.
So he has great respect, deep respect for Barack Obama. He sees Barack Obama as one who has the same values as him. A loyal man. But he dreaded the next 4 years. President Trump wasn't even in office yet. The inauguration hadn't even happened yet. And this is what he said to Barack Obama. And keep in mind, this was not coming from the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. At the time, he was director of the FBI. I dread the next 4 years. I dread it. Why? Why did he dread the next 4 years? Here's clip 5.
Well, I had some sense of the nature and character of the new president of the United States.
Okay, so he understood that Donald Trump was morally unfit for the office. I played that for you yesterday. He knows about the nature of the character of Donald Trump. He had a sense for that. Remember the quote we gave to you yesterday from Michael Hayden, former director of the NSA and the CIA? The one who emphatically last March said that there is no FISA investigation. There is nothing like that going on. And how do I know? Well, my instincts are really powerful. That's how I know. And also, I can trust what James Comey and Jim Clapper said. And now we come to find out that that was all a bunch of lies, just a pack of lies. The stories, of course, are changing. They're evolving. And this is happening in just 12, 13 months? Oh, yes. Barack Obama is trustworthy. He's loyal. He shares my values. I'm going to miss him. I deeply respect him. And the next 4 years, I'm dreading it already. It is going to be a nightmare, said the FBI director. The director of the FBI, who turned on who? it's surprising to me that President Trump kept him in office for 4 or 5 months. He says Trump turned on him in February of last year. He was dreading the Trump administration before Trump was even inaugurated. And it's not me saying that. I'm not sitting here saying this is what's going on in his heart, even if he hasn't said it directly. He said it directly. You heard it yourself. In his own words, I have some sense of the nature and the character of Donald Trump. Here's what he said in the rest of that clip, clip 6.
Well, I had some sense of the nature and character of the new president of the United States, and I worried very much that there would be an effort to erode the independence of the FBI. And I worried, given what I had seen during the campaign, that effort to remain a part might be challenged in a Trump administration. And I was right, but that's what I worried about.
That's what he said. That's why he was worried about it. And did you know at that time, he was investigating Donald Trump. He was tapping into the phones at Trump Tower. He was the one approving the application before the FISA court to single out Carter Page, so that we could track his movements, so that we could follow the Trump administration. Barack Obama knew all about it. No higher loyalty. Barack Obama knew all about it. So did James Clapper. So did Jim Comey. At that time, of course, they said, hey, nothing's going on. Look, this is a smooth transition. There's nothing nefarious here that we're looking into. You're not being investigated. Mr. Trump, you're not being investigated. And then the president says, well, why don't you tell the American people that? He wouldn't do it. Because, in fact, he was being investigated. His phones were being tapped. And that has since come out. And now the story evolves. Barack Obama's trustworthy. I'm really going to miss you. I dread the next 4 years. I know about the nature and the character of Donald Trump. I know all about it. Because after all, I'm not a partisan in this. I'm no partisan hack. Barack Obama said so. What's the story going to be a year from now? Or 5 or 10 years from now? When they write their tell-all book, I mean, anymore, the tell-all comes out 4 months after the fact. But when it's 5, 10 years down the road, I mean, what will they say? What will they reveal? Maybe it'll be something like Transformed by Truth. Hey, look, I mean, you're already getting a bit of that as it is. We knew he was corrupt from day one, and that's why we unleashed the dogs on him. It was all hands on deck to bring down Donald Trump, to destroy these institutions of the United States, these bedrock institutions of America. That's been the goal from the beginning. And I mean, it's nonstop. It's intensifying. It doesn't matter what anyone says on a radio program or writes at a conservative blog. It does not matter. You still got to go after him. Everyone's on board with this. Here again, just to close the loop on this bit about his meeting with President Obama, here's clip 7.
President Obama asked, what's the plan for briefing that material? We had decided that Director Comey would meet with the president-elect privately after we briefed the president-elect and his team on the general findings so that he could review it in a more private, more sensitive setting with the president-elect.
That was James Clapper. How did President Obama respond to that?
He didn't say a word. President Obama has a great poker face, but he simply turned. So if I'm President Obama, he turned slightly to his left, looked at me, and went like this, and then looked back at Director Clapper. So kind of gave me a Groucho Marx, is how I thought about it, double eyebrow raise. Didn't say a word, but communicated to me at least, and I could be misreading it because I don't know President Obama's eyebrow raises, that sort of a sympathy and concern, like good luck with that.
Sympathy, concern, and good luck with that. This is concerning the salacious details of the charges about Trump with the Russians, with the prostitutes? Who's gonna bring this up to him? Well, there's going to be a general meeting. James Clapper, you remember him from yesterday. James Clapper is going to take the lead with that. But then Comey's going to come in later, and he's going to deal with President one-on-one. And he's going to tell the president, this would have been early January 2017, look, there are these allegations out there, just so that you know. And Barack Obama with the raised eyebrows, the Groucho Marx, he's concerned. He's sympathetic. He says, good luck with that. They were all in it together. Signals. They were all in it together. I've given programs before last year, several months into the year, about all the things that the Obama administration was doing to make sure that the paper trail stayed in place. They were going after him before the inauguration. And he was putting all of these policies in place to make sure that the information spread throughout the deep state. Not just at the FBI, but the DOJ needed this. All of these arms, these agencies. Presided over, by the executive branch. President Trump is in charge. President Trump, as of January 21st last year, he was president. But you look back now, I mean, hindsight's 2020. You see some of these revelations coming forward. And the picture is getting clearer by the day. Here, I mean, and look at the tone. Look at the attitude. Well, Barack Obama, he was the outgoing president. I have such deep respect for him. He's my boss, after all. He's so loyal. And then Trump comes in, and Comey is dreading it. Comey thinks he's morally unfit. Comey thinks he's caught up into all of these nefarious deeds. These scandalous acts. And now Donald Trump's the bad guy for letting him go? Donald Trump, for all of his moral failings, is the president of the United States. He's the president. And this is something they simply will not accept. They're out to destroy him. It is. Like Joel Hilliker said in that piece he posted over the weekend, it's all out war against the president. What we're witnessing now is nothing less than a war waged by people who wittingly or unwittingly are working to bring America down from within. That's what they're working to do, and they're having quite a lot of success in doing that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send in some feedback, you can send emails, as always, to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
If the FBI, for instance, had a FISA court order of some sort for a surveillance, would that be information you would know or not know?
Yes.
You would be told this?
I would know that.
If there was a FISA court order, yes, on something like this?
Something like this, absolutely.
And at this point, you can't confirm or deny whether that exists?
I can deny it.
There is no FISA court order?
Not to my knowledge.
Of anything at Trump Tower?
No.
That's James Clapper from March of last year, March 5th, after President Trump complained that his tower, Trump Tower, had been wiretapped during the transition months. And we now know that that is something that happened. And at the time he made that statement on Meet the Press, James Clapper knew that it was going on. And at the time that they were meeting with Barack Obama in December and January during the transition, they knew. Obama knew. The deep state knew that they were spying on Trump. Strzok and Page, they knew they needed an insurance policy. And so they were spying, looking for something, looking for anything to make him out to be a criminal. That's James Clapper, the same one as I played in the first segment that Comey referred to. How are we going to brief him on all of these salacious allegations? Well, Clapper's going to take care of this, and then I'm going to meet with him privately. And the outgoing president, Barack Obama, said, well, good luck with that. I'm worried about that. That is a cause for concern. Let's make sure everything is in place. Now make sure, it seems like it's all by the book. Susan Rice will take care of that. Everything's by the book after all. But let's just make sure everything's in place so that this trail from all of these investigations is there for everyone to see. Even if a lot of it's based on the dossier, let's just get that information out there. That was coming out at the same time, you'll recall. More and more of the details during that same interview from Sunday. It's interesting, too. Here again, if it was a real reporter talking to the former FBI director, he would have right away spoken up and said, well, now hang on a second. So you approached President Trump about the Russian threat, about Russia meddling in the election. Trump wasn't in charge when that election happened. But of course, that didn't happen. Here's how the exchange went down. This is Comey again in the pre-inauguration briefing. So he's just briefing the incoming president, President Trump, telling him that, look, we've got high confidence here that Russia, in some way, Russia interfered with the campaign. Now, we don't know if they affected the election one way or the other, but we know there's evidence that the Russians were interfering. And according to Comey, this is how President Trump or President-elect Trump and Mike Pence, this is how they reacted to that news. Here's clip 8.
And then the conversation, to my surprise, moved into a PR conversation about how the Trump team would position this and what they could say about this. They actually started talking about drafting a press release with us still sitting there. And the reason that was so striking to me is that that's just not done.
That was done in October of 2016. Back when Barack Obama and Susan Rice were trying to come up with some sort of explanation. How do we tell the American people that we've gathered evidence, that there's evidence here of Russia meddling? How do we communicate this to the American people, particularly since it looks like Hillary's going to win? I mean, we don't want to cast any kind of doubt on Hillary's victory. That happened months, just a few months before he supposedly went to President-elect Trump and then Mike Pence to talk about, well, hey, this is what we've discovered What do you want to do about it? And according to Comey, they too were concerned about the PR. Here's what he continued to say in that same section, clip 9.
No one, to my recollection, asked, so what's coming next from the Russians? How might we stop it? What's the future look like? It was all, what can we say about what they did and how it affects the election that we just had?
So that's Comey talking about Trump and Pence saying, not how can we stop this, but how can we make this not look too bad? Now, you backtrack a few months, like I say, October of 2016. Who was the president of the United States? And who was the director of the FBI? You backtrack even before that. I played the CNN report just a couple of weeks ago. This Obama official, Brett Bruen was his name. He was sounding the alarm as early as 2014. He was saying, look, Russia's going to use the same tactics that they used in Ukraine and elsewhere. And we've got to be ready. We can't stand down. We've got to be ready. We've got an election coming up ourselves in 2016. We've got to fight against this. We've got to defend against this. And this is what CNN concluded. Here's clip 11.
Whatever the reason, the warning of the looming Russian threat was not shared across the Obama administration.
They didn't believe it. Obama himself, Susan Rice, remember. The ones in the White House that were responsible for the cybersecurity guys, they were fighting back. And then Susan Rice shows up. This is according to the new book, The Inside Story of Putin's War on America and the Election of Donald Trump. Susan Rice comes in. She confronts the White House cybersecurity. And she says to them, you guys stand down, basically. Don't you get ahead of us. Barack Obama. He's the one who has the higher loyalty here. He's the one who calls the shots. Listen, we have to share his values. Don't you dare get out in front of Barack Obama. This article at BizPak, I've quoted it before, it says, President Obama has been questioned by even his own former security officials for not acting more aggressively to counteract Russian active measures during the 2016 presidential campaign. Here is Donald Trump and Mike Pence. This is during the transition. They're not even in power yet. They're not even really in a position to be able to fight back. At the time, the president was Barack Obama. The head of national security was Susan Rice. The director of the FBI was Jim Comey. Over at the DOJ, Loretta Lynch, Jim Comey's assistant, Andy McCabe. What did those individuals do to counteract the Russian threat? What did the individuals that were actually in power do? The New York Times, even, this is in late February of this year, some former Obama officials now confess to misgivings about Mr. Obama's reluctance to act or speak out more forcefully, even as the evidence piled up during the spring and summer of 2016 that the Russians had hacked the Democratic National Committee and were behind the leak of damaging emails about Hillary Clinton. That was happening in the summer of 2016. It was happening on through to the election. Barack Obama and Susan Rice, they knew all about it, and so did Jim Comey, presumably. But they all thought Hillary would win. Look at how the details and the facts of all this have emerged just because, to their utter shock and dread, Donald Trump won in November of 2016. It's stunning, the turn of events. And as my father has said of late, I mean, temporarily, it's not a long-lasting salvation by any means, but temporarily, America was saved. And certainly we're seeing so much about the Antiochus administration being fully exposed under the clear light of day. But that's not going to slow down the enemies of the Trump administration. Yesterday, Michael Cohen's attorneys went into the Manhattan court. He's Trump's lawyer. He's Trump's attorney. And he's now fighting, look, you can't just let them have all these files. They've gone in and just taken everything. All of my devices. They raided my house. They raided my offices. They raided my hotel room. And from one report, they got into his safety deposit box. And so he's fighting in court yesterday. He doesn't have that many clients. But one of them, according to his attorneys, is a personality. He's in media. And we'd prefer to keep him confidential. Well, the judge would not stand for that. So the attorneys made it known yesterday that besides President Trump being one of his clients, Sean Hannity of Fox News, a big Trump supporter. And I mean, when this was made known, the internet yesterday just about exploded. Because Sean Hannity is supposed to reveal to the whole, before he can say anything on TV, these are the rules. And the left establishes the guidelines here. So follow along if you can. He has to disclose private conversations he's had. Even if he hasn't purchased the services of a lawyer, he's got to fully disclose every conversation he's had. Because if he doesn't do that, how can he comment on it publicly? How can he speak out against the raid on Cohen's house? Surely there's a conflict of interest here. And so now Sean Hannity's the target. But keep in mind, he's a target only because he supports Donald Trump. It's Trump who is the target, always, always. And so you look at some of the hysterical reporting yesterday, and it's becoming so predictable. And at the same time, frightening. I mean, once the mob gets going, it is frightening. When you consider those foundational institutions of the United States of America, listen to what I think Tucker Carlson summed it up well in his program last night. Here's clip 13.
But keep in mind that Sean Hannity is a talk show host. He's not under investigation by anyone for anything. Who he hires as a lawyer and why is nobody's business. No judge has a right to violate his privacy or anybody else's. Those used to be the rules, but the rules have changed. The point of the Russia investigation, you may have figured out, is not to find collusion. There was no collusion. Everybody knows that. Everyone's always known that. The point is and was to hurt Trump and anyone close to Trump. And by the way, it's working. Now, maybe you hate Trump and you're happy about that. But what are the rest of us losing in this process? Attorney-client privilege no longer means anything. We learned that the other day. Neither does privacy or public reputation or fairness. If Cohen's other clients can be exposed by the left solely to embarrass them, what is the next step exactly? Could you punish a Trump ally by, I don't know, revealing his internet search history? What about someone's medical records? How about a private conversation with a priest or rabbi? Why not? All of that will happen, no question. And when it does, the left will cheer because extremism in the pursuit of Trump is no vice, according to them. The question is, do you really want to live in a country like that? Who would?
That's Tucker Carlson last night. Extremism in the pursuit of Trump. There are no rules when it comes to going after the president of the United States. You can lie. You can deceive. You can destroy lives. You can raid homes, offices. You've got to bring down Donald Trump because after all, these self-appointed judges in the media, they know, they have a sense of the character and the nature of Donald Trump. They can do no wrong, but they certainly know anything and everything about Donald Trump and anyone close to him. They're all suspects. They're all criminals. He's the mafia boss, remember. Barack Obama's the saint. Even if I didn't vote for him, I mean, I still swoon over him because I share his values. There is no higher loyalty than Barack Obama. But with Donald Trump, I mean, clearly, before he even set foot in office, I was dreading it already. Because he is morally unfit. This is what we're seeing. This is what we're seeing play out, which is why I've keep got to going back. I keep going back to it and also keep referring back to some of the things we've written, even just recently. But America Under Attack, I mean, that was early 2013. Go back and look at that, and then those early chapters of Great Again. Those are awesome as well. But let me just conclude here with something, again, Joel Hilliker had in his article from the weekend. He says, for the duration of the 15-month-old Trump presidency, the media have found and broadcast every bit of unflattering, embarrassing, salacious information they could find about this man. Sadly, of this there is no small amount. America has never had a president whose past sins were so public or who provided so much ammunition to his enemies by using an unfiltered populist megaphone like social media. And then he goes on to talk about how anything and everything is publicized, even what is implied or alleged or possible. Richard was saying in our meeting this morning, it's amazing just when you hear Comey talk about Obama, and you've seen some of that or heard some of that even on today's show. Well, he's the president. He was objective. He saw that I was not a partisan hack, and then switch it over to Donald Trump. And, well, you heard it today. I don't need to repeat myself. My father said in that article from a couple weeks back, something diabolical was going on until Mr. Trump was elected, and it's still going on behind the scenes during his presidency. It says, and the media aided and abetted the whole process. The more stories that come out, the clearer this ugly reality becomes. Well, we'll break it off there just a few minutes early. I've got a forum to run upstairs to here in just a bit. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.